Okay, good evening. It's good once again to be back in the swing of halacha. I had entertained the possibility of doing a Navi Shir, but I had feedback that there was greater interest in practical halacha, and we aim to please, so I hope we'll get a lot out of it. Tonight's topic is women and tefillah. Next week, in Yom Hashem, November 30th, the subject will be the icing on the cake, cutting letters on Shabbos. Seems to come up. So, all right, everything else. So I hope we'll try to clarify some of that discussion next week. Before we begin tonight, the subcategories of what I'd like to talk about are: should women daven or not? If women are davening, what are the primary tefillahs? What's the pecking order, so to speak, or the order of priority when time is limited, and other questions that come up with regard to women and tefillah. But before we begin, from any sources, what is our intuition? Some of us are familiar probably with a lot of the sources relating to this discussion, but what's our intuition? Should women be chayav to daven?
Yes.
You say yes, why?
Because you have to say something of praise and thanks at least once a day. That's
what we feel.
That's the least. And the most
pleasurable. Well, I'm talking just what our intuition would tell us. Without, you're way ahead of me. I don't know anything yet.
Okay.
What's one's sense? Should women be chayav to daven or not? Not that we posken everything based on our intuition, but it does play some role, as I hope to demonstrate. What is our sense of what the halacha, or we would think the halacha should be? Okay, I was hoping I would elicit both.
Amount of diapers and clothing and all sorts of things. Potential.
Okay, at least in some circumstances. Okay, at least in some circumstances that arise in life that particularly can confront a woman, well, we might have a sense that women should be exempt. That wouldn't seem to be applicable at all times and in all circumstances. But barring that, what would be our sense? I don't want to be prodding the witness, but I think we would agree that people should daven. Men should daven, women should daven. I think I once mentioned in a shir that I had an old tape of Rav Soloveitchik addressing NCSY children. They had a conference on tefillah, and he was asked to speak, and he brought them in. He tried to develop a discussion, and he asked them, he said, you know, there's a machlokas, there's a dispute between the Rambam and the Ramban. Maimonides and Nachmanides, the Rambam holds as a mitzvah min ha-Torah, forget about men versus women, there's a mitzvah min ha-Torah to daven every day, according to the Rambam. And the Ramban says it's not so. The Ramban, Nachmanides, says that when the Gemara talks about u'la'ovdo b'chol levavcha, that there's a mitzvah to daven, that that's midrabbanan, but min ha-Torah there's no mitzvah to daven. And he opened the question to the kids. He said, who would you concur with? Who would you agree with? Without knowing any sources, what's your gut feeling? What is your sense of what you would feel? Without knowing the Gemara necessarily, what do you think should be the answer? And they all know that they're talking to this Talmud Chacham, and they try to pull out different sources, and even the philosophers, the people are quoting Kant and other things, trying to impress. And finally, one kid said, how can you have a religion without prayer? And he said, right. That's what he wanted to hear. How could we entertain, what is avoda, what is Yiddishkeit, what is the Torah, if not an approach to HaKadosh Baruch Hu? How could there not be a mitzvah to daven? So he posed it as a question on the Ramban. In terms of our intuition, our sense, again, not working from the sources, but how could there not be a mitzvah to daven? At the end of this year, I hope to come back to that and have relevance to our discussion about women and tefillah as well. But now let's take a brief look at the sources. It's a very fascinating thing that Klal Yisrael has tried very, very hard with superhuman effort to preserve the Masorah and this immense, vast body of knowledge called Shas, called Talmud, called Halacha, called Agada, and everything else that's included in the Torah has been preserved through the Doros. Much of the time it's been Baal Peh, from Rebbe to Talmud. An amazing thing. We can't fathom today how all of what's in these books was conveyed, or a lot of what's in these books was conveyed without being transmitted written in the written medium. But nevertheless, with all of that, there are slight discrepancies. We have in various places in the Gemara slight discrepancies between texts. We have different girsaos, different versions of the Gemara. And what's very, very interesting is that ultimately the question as to whether women are chayiv in davening boils down to a very slight textual change. Some Rishonim have it one way, and some have it the other way. It's in the Gemara and Brachas and Daf Chaf Amud Beis. There's a slight textual difference, and depending on which text you have, will determine really whether women are chayiv in tefillah, so to speak, as I'll demonstrate right now. There's a Mishnah that says women are chayiv in tefillah. Mishnah says that women are chayiv in tefillah, but it doesn't say what tefillah is. So in the Gemara as we have it, if you would open up a Gemara and Brachas and look at that page, and that's the way Rashi had it and others, it says why? Because rachamei ninhu. It means tefillah is rachamim. Tefillah is seeking rachamim from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Therefore, women are obligated. As Shakespeare would say, the lady doth protest too much, methinks. Not every time a Mishnah tells us we're chayiv, does the Gemara have to say, and you know why? Because of this. It sounds like there's some reason why we would think a woman is exempt, and the Gemara therefore to say, no, never, despite what you're thinking, she is obligated. So what would be the reason why a woman would be exempt? Mitzvah to say she's man grummy, you must get married to a rabbi. A mitzvah to say she's man grum. I didn't speak, we did not confer before. Honest. We all know the recurring principle in all of halacha, that is, barring an explicit source to the contrary, a time-bound mitzvah, positive mitzvah, women are exempt from. So apparently this Gemara was working with the assumption that tefillah is a time-bound mitzvah. How is tefillah a time-bound mitzvah?
It has to be done.
Right, because the shachris mincha marav. Shachris has to be done in the first 4 hours of the day. Mincha is after midday or half hour after midday until sunset, let's say, and then marav is in the evening time. So tefillah has different set times. But I'll tell you a secret. That's only midrabbanan. No one maintains that min ha-Torah there's different times for tefillah. That is not the case. None of the poskim say that. If there is a mitzvah min ha-Torah to daven, it has no set times. The Rabbanon, as is always the case with mitzvahs midrabbanon, they further develop and give further guidelines for halacha and mitzvah, so the Rabbanon made those time slots. So working backwards, if the Gemara says, according to the text as we have it and as Rashi had it, if the Gemara says women must daven because tefillah is rachamim, it's something we all need to ask for heavenly mercy, which means the Gemara was responding to the fact that tefillah is a mitzvah asesha asman grama. So what sort of a mitzvah is the Gemara addressing? A rabbinic mitzvah. Okay? So if you have that text of the Gemara is referring to a mitzvah of tefillah, which is a rabbinic mitzvah, which should mean that there's no mitzvah min ha-Torah to daven, which in fact, as I mentioned before, is the shita of the Ramban. Nachmanides says it's a rabbinic mitzvah. And Rashi's version of the Gemara and the way we have it seems to back that up. However, there's always a however, there's a second version of the Gemara. The Rif, the great Rabbeinu Yitzchak Alfasi, one of the great Sephardic Rishonim, is really the Rebbe of the Rebbe of the Rambam, and the Rambam himself, Maimonides, had the same version of the Gemara. He basically writes it explicitly in the Mishnah Torah. They had a different version. It says, the Mishnah said women are chayav in tefillah. Why? Because it's not a mitzvah tasei shazman grama. Different words. It's just one little phrase. But what that means is, if it's not a mitzvah tasei shazman grama, that means there is a mitzvah of tefillah without time boundaries, which means there must be a mitzvah min ha-Torah. And only later the Rabbanan added time limitations to it, daven shachris in this window of time, and mincha here, and ma'ariv here. But there was a mitzvah before that. There's a mitzvah in the absence of that. So according to that version of the Gemara, there's a mitzvah of tefillah min ha-Torah. So interestingly, the question of whether, of what mitzvah women have in tefillah is directly interconnected with, is the mitzvah of tefillah min ha-Torah or midrabbanan. We have two versions of the Gemara. Interestingly, the what's called the Ksav Yad Mincha, the Munich version of the Gemara, there's a museum in Germany that has an old version of the Gemara, which is considered very authoritative, actually has it the way the Rif and the Rambam have it. But we can't be machria, we have both versions, and therefore they both come into play in halacha, and they both really have relevance. So we have two versions of the Gemara, two Gersos, which ultimately are the difference between whether Tefillah is a mitzvah from the Torah or from the Rabbanan. Now this has great bearing in Halacha. Because aside from texts, there are other things that influence how we interpret Halacha. And perhaps even more important than text is people, history. Many of the poskim, the early poskim recorded in the Shulchan Aruch, took a look at the reality, at least in Europe, probably in other countries as well, but many of us are of European ancestry. The reality was that women didn't daven very much, most women. That seems to be a recorded fact. Some daven more, but many women didn't daven very much at all. Now, sometimes Jews stray from what we're supposed to do, but usually we're given guidance. Right? Chaim saw people speaking Lashon Hara, he wrote Svarim. He saw people doing other things. Great Gedolei Yisrael, there's a problem if the community isn't living up to it, so it's the job of the Gedolei Yisrael to address it, to say something, to try to steer people back to what's right. We have to make our best effort. But apparently, the minhag, at least for centuries, seemed to have been that women didn't daven very much, and nobody seemed to have made an issue of it. It seemed to have been accepted by the great leaders of the time. So that seems to have been the accepted minhag. Yeah?
What about personal prayer?
What do you mean?
Like personal expression, not
like spontaneous formal formulation? Yeah, well, as we're going to see soon, and this is certainly, no matter which way we go in all these postkin, it's a good thing to daven. And it's whether one is chayiv or not, it's Kodesh Baruch Hu hears our tefillahs, and there are certain guidelines as to in what context we're allowed to, you know, add in. We add in into Shema Koleinu and other places. The Netziv, the great Rav Naftali Tzvi Yehuda Berlin, in his commentary on last week's Parsha, he points out that Avram was davening to Hashem, and then the whole episode with the city of Sodom comes up. God says, I'm going to destroy this city. It says, Avram odenu omeid lefnei Hashem. Avram is still standing before God, which means tefillah. Lefnei Hashem in the Torah means tefillah. And then he asks, maybe there's 50 tzaddikim, maybe 45, maybe... Then he starts making a specific request. It says, and it says, this shows us that the greatest efficacy of tefillah is when we're in the midst of a standard text, as you mentioned before, praise, request, thanks, the standard formulation of tefillah. In the middle of that is when a personal or an immediately relevant or a specific tefillah is the most efficacious. But there's plenty of instances in which people do their own spontaneous formulations. It's a little tefillah on the side, but sometimes we like to put it into Shema Koleinu. There's certainly merit to all of that. I'll have to come back to that a little bit at the end. But getting back to the reality of what the Minhag Yisrael seemed to have been, so the Magen Avraham, one of the classic commentaries in the Shulchan Aruch, you open the Shulchan Aruch in the first page, he's right there on the page, so the great Magen Avraham, it happens to be in chapter 106, and in Kuf Vav, this cut in days, says the following. He says that the Rambam says there's a mitzvah to daven min ha-Torah. As I said before, it's a dispute whether it's Torah or Rabbinic. The Rambam says there's a mitzvah min ha-Torah. And he says this must be the reason for the practice of many women who don't really daven. They don't daven a full davening like men do. He says it must be because min ha-Torah we don't have all of the details, all of the specifics of tefillah, that you have to start with this kind of formulation, have a middle section, have an end, and all of those other laws of tefillah. It must be that the core mitzvah in HaTorah is very, very limited. You just have to make some kind of request. So the Magen Avraham suggests, so women will make some sort of a request. Women must say, Eivir Shivat Helfen, some sort of supplication, even if a very, very short one. He assumes that every woman would do that, every person would do that. They tell stories about the Brisker Rav, when he would hear people's problems, he would always say, L'shivoscha kivisi Hashem. Tefillah should be on our lips, so it's natural that a person would daven. So they're yotzei, they're mitzvah min ha-Torah with that. And he says it could be that the Rabbanon never obligated them in the details. The other part of tefillah, which is rabbinic, was never given to women. He says it could be. Very interesting to defend the practice by saying it could be. Rav Moshe Feinstein in the Tshuva says, what does he mean? It could be. It must be. Right, you can't plead maybe. If If this is his defense, it has to be that, as much as he means, it must be that midaraisam in HaTorah, they fulfill the obligation, and midarabanan, there is no further obligation. So he says that must be the defense of the practice of the common men of women that, that existed in Europe. Yeah, you hear me? Yeah, I said that in the context that the Magen Avraham says, certainly they say some form of tefillah. I just mentioned that Yidden are supposed to be that way. Rav Shimshon Pinkus, who was a Yid who was Mifter a few years ago, said tragically in an accident, he has in his Sefer, he says a human being has a natural tendency when you're in trouble and a person is nervous, we start mumbling. Right? Oh boy, oh, I'm in trouble. So there's all kinds of things. Sometimes, who knows what comes from one's mouth, but there's a natural tendency to start saying things when a person's in trouble. He says that's your tefillah gene. That's the human tendency to daven. It's just we don't know how to channel it sometimes, but that's what's supposed to happen. So that I mentioned that in that regard. That he assumes that we are that way and we should be that way. Men and women, we should be that way. So that's what the Magen Avraham suggests. He says it's a little bit difficult to accept that. He says, first of all, that most Rishonim hold that tefillah is midrabbanan. If tefillah is only rabbinic, then you can't separate it into two elements, the core mitzvah and the edit mitzvah. If there's only one mitzvah, it's one package deal and you couldn't separate it. Actually, later Achronim say it's not true. If you count up the Rishonim, more hold that it actually is min HaTorah, but they say that that defense is difficult nonetheless, because this suggestion... that only brings in here. If it's for me, it's mutter. I think it's open. Even the defense that the Magen Avraham puts forth is a little bit difficult to accept, because it's not so clear that min haTorah, that the Torah mitzvah of tefillah is without any rules. Now, a careful study of the Rambam shows at the beginning of the laws of tefillah, he says women are obligated in tefillah, and then later, after having explained the details of tefillah, as Chava said before, you have to start with praise and then have request, bakasha, and then have thanksgiving. He says again, women are obligated in tefillah. So some emphasize, the Rambam seems to state again, women are obligated in the general mitzvah and in the specifics of it. So many don't accept the defense of the Magen Avraham, but this is an insight into how halacha works. The reality is, once that was the minhag, and we have one of the great poskim giving a defense of it, so this certainly is what to rely on for women who do a very minimal tefillah. There certainly is firm halachic basis for that, given Minhag Yisrael and the explanation that we have from the Magen Avraham, these difficulties notwithstanding. Even he himself, elsewhere in Shulchan Aruch, doesn't seem so confident. He seems to assume that women should be davening more than that, but he does put that out as a defense, and therefore there is what to rely on. Interestingly, the Mishnah Berurah, the great Chafetz Chaim himself, who says he says like the Magen Avraham, it's not really good to rely on this. Many poskim don't hold that way. But it's very interesting. One of the things we have from the Chafetz Chaim is really the writings of his son. His son, Reb Aryeh Leib, was a great Talmud Chacham. Reb Leib, the son of the Chafetz Chaim, wrote what he called Dugma'os Midarkei Abba Marizal. Examples of the behavior of my father, and he's a very interesting story how he raised his children. A very interesting account in there. So one of the things he says is that when my mother was raising the children, my father told her she didn't really have to daven. Not much, anyway. Even the Chafetz Chaim himself relied on this leniency to a degree. It's, of course, ideal to daven, but even the Chafetz Chaim said that we have what to rely on. But certainly, at least, even if we go with a minimalist approach, the Magen Avraham is at least saying some form of bakasha, some form of a request of the HaKadosh Baruch Hu should be said. Because there is a Mishnah that says women are chayv in tefillah. Even if we take the most minimalist approach, to say something, and the Magen Avraham just assumed we would. You know, maybe there was a time when the Shem Hashem was more sugar, was more common on people's lips. Maybe we're lacking that way. I don't mean women, I mean me, I mean all of us. There should be a natural tendency for tefillah. Interestingly, on that very same tape that I mentioned before, a tape of Soloveitchik talking to NCSY children on the subject of tefillah, at the beginning, as I recall, I lent it to somebody, never got it back, like most of my good tapes. But at the beginning, he opened up the floor. He said, whom do we find in Tanakh who davened? So somebody said Abraham. Somebody said Yitzchak. Somebody said Yaakov. And somebody said Yosef. Or here we have others later, certainly. But somebody said Yosef. He said, Joseph? I don't know. Did Joseph daven? Maybe you're right, but I don't know. Later, I was looking in a medrash. I found there's a medrash Tanhuma that says, when Yosef's Odom, when Potiphar, it says in the Torah that Potiphar saw that Hashem was with him. But Yara Adonov, his master, saw that God was with him. What does it mean? How did he see that God was with him? He can't see that. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the Medrash Tanhuma says he saw that he was always davening. Wherever he went, when he did something, he invoked the Shem Hashem. Hashem should give me success in this endeavor and in that endeavor. Whatever he did, he davened. So there actually is a source in Medrash. Yosef HaTzadik, I mean, I would imagine he did anyway, but we actually have a written source in the Midrashim that Yosef davened too, and certainly we should have that sense, and there should at least be, at the very least, a tefillah katsara, some short tefillah, and it should be in the form of a request. Really, tefillah means request. Praising Hashem and thanking Hashem are introduction and summing up of tefillah, but tefillah means request. There's a sefer, the Beis Elokim, by the great Mavit, who was a contemporary of the Shulchan Aruch. He gives a one-line definition of tefillah at the beginning, and then he has 100 pages explaining that definition. And his one-line definition is, it's asking HaKadosh Baruch Hu for something that you need and you don't have. It's a little bit more than that, but that's a paraphrase of his definition. Tefillah is ultimately asking HaKadosh Baruch Hu for something that I don't have, so it means a bakosha, a request. I saw in the sefer, Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky gives us an example. A request would be the paragraph we have after Birkas HaShachar, after the 15 brachas from the beginning. There's a Yehi Ratzon, I assume he means the first one. Yiratzon Alfanecha, Hashem Elokeinu v'Elokei Osinu, Shetargileinu v'Sarasecha. You should make us acquainted, familiar with the Torah, v'Dabkeinu v'Mitzvasecha. We should cling to your mitzvahs, and so on. We shouldn't come to trials and tribulations and degradations and so on and so forth. It's a short paragraph. That's an example of a tefillah katsara, a short tefillah. If one's in a rush and there isn't time to daven more, from Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky, that would be a good example of a tefillah katsara. This morning in the girls' high school, I was teaching, we finished learning Hilchos Mezuzah. The Kitzur Shulchan Aruch mentions the practice, other posts can mention that when a person leaves the house in the morning, to kiss the Mezuzah and say, Hashem Shomri, God is my guardian, Hashem Tzili Al Yad Yemini, Hashem is my shadow on my right side, which the pasuk from which the Gemara actually derived the concept of Mezuzah on the right side, Hashem Yishmar Tzeisi Yuvoi Me'asav Yad Olam, Hashem should guard me going out and coming in. I'm leaving for the day now. Should be with success. I should come home safely from now and forever. Very short tefillah. I think if a person's in a tremendous rush, we could find the time certainly to say a tefillah like that. It's a line and a half. Just play the tape over and over. You get it by heart. Yeah, sorry. Yeah.
Is there any tefillahs maybe that is, like you could mention this one or that one, like you were, you know, sort of certain tefillahs that might be appropriate?
Many, many beautiful parakim and chapters in Tehillim, and we should, you know, there's certain classic ones, 121 and 130 and 142, that we use, and certain other ones that are listed for different requests that people have, but we should realize that Tehillim is praise of Hashem. Tehillim is not really a request. Tehillim is a powerful lead-in to request. I once heard that Rav Yitzchak Hudner, I think it was, one of the great Rashi Yeshiva, said that one time he saw the Yeshiva Brachim, they said Tehillim after davening, and they said the Tehillim with a lot of intensity and kavana. And then when the chazan at the end was saying either the mishaberach or the chena, whatever it is, the request that you say afterward, the guys were walking out the door. He said that's like going up to the palace, knocking on the door, and then when they ought to open the door, you walked away. The Tehillim gets us in. It's a powerful tool in its own right, but for the sake of reciting a bakasha, a request, we should add something to it. Tehillim is a very important thing to say and has tremendous power, but the bakosha should be something more to fulfill this obligation. We're asking Hashem for something.
What page is the one?
This is in the Hebrew version. It's on page 10. It's after the 15 short brachos that we have, Birchos HaShachar, in the morning.
Okay.
You know, before we get to the other sections.
It's not Shinazo, but it's part of the different order.
No, in Sfarad you also have, interestingly, Nusach Ari changes the order of the brachos, but it's still the same ones. These brachos are from the Gemara. I would add, it's not that difficult to tack on the brachos also. If one to daven Shemona Esrei, one needs a few minutes at least of peace of mind which is not always available. That's the reality of different circumstances in life. But when you're dealing with short brachos, if you get through one and then there's an interruption, you can come back to the other, so short brachos are easier. So I think to say Berachas HaShachar, which the post can say, is advisable for women, and then in the end to have this bakasha is certainly appropriate, even for somebody who doesn't have that much time. And that, if there's more time, so many posts can feel that at least the Daven Shmona Esrei of Shacharis and Mincha is very appropriate. According to many posts, that's the core obligation. Again, that requires a certain freedom that not everyone has, or at least not everyone has at those times. The Rambam writes, and it's codified in Shulchan Aruch as well, that one can't daven Shmona Esrei unless there's a certain expected potential for kavana. If I know I will not be, it doesn't have to be a 15-minute, a half-hour Shmona Esrei, but at least to be able to say a basic Shmona Esrei without being interrupted. If one doesn't have that opportunity, so you really can't, you can't daven. Rosh Hashiva, or Zelig Epstein, is fond of quoting a quotation from the author of the Sefer Pele Yoetz, one of the great Musar Svarim. He used to say a Yehi Ratzon, he used to say a Tzila before he would bench, before he would recite Birkas Hamazon, Yehi Ratzon, may it be Hashem's will that nobody knock on the door while I'm benching. Apparently he was sought after, and a lot of people have come with issues. No one should interrupt me while I'm benching. And then when he finished, he would say a shevach, a hodah, thank you, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, for not interrupting me in those whatever few minutes that he was benching. So sometimes we could relate to that sentiment. Halavai had the few minutes to be able to daven with peace of mind. So again, if it's possible to daven a Shmona Esrei, we should. But if it's not possible, so then you have to go with the more minimalist approach of the other poskim. Beyond that, if there's more time, women are not obligated in Kriya Shema the way men are, but the Shulchan Aruch, the Ramah says explicitly in chapter 7 in Shulchan Aruch that it's correct to recite Kriya Shema, or at the very least, Shema Yisrael Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echad, and the next verse, Baruch Shem Kvod Malchuso Leilam Void, to the Makabel Ol Malchus Shemayim, the basic statement of accepting the yoke of heaven, that Shema Yisrael, we should try to say, if there's more time, it's appropriate to lead into the Shemona Esrei in the morning with the bracha that precedes it. After we say the Shema, after Shema is printed in the Shachar service, you have a bracha that's called Emes V'Yatzeh that continues and leads right into the Shemona Esrei. We mention the Exodus from Egypt, Yetzias Mitzrayim, and from that lead right into Shemona Esrei, the Gemara talks at great length about how we want to be Somech Ge'ula L'Tzila, to connect mention of how Hashem redeemed us from Mitzrayim and lead into Shemona Esrei from that, so that's meritorious to do. Yeah. Yeah, it's hard to say which is higher in the order of priority. I think so. Some poskim seem to feel that because there's mention of the Chiras Yetzias Mitzrayim and it's Geula Letzila into Shemona Esrei. Yeah, some do seem to feel that way. Yeah, I believe so, yeah, I believe so. Right, often there's more time at night than there is earlier in the day, so we have to, it's very hard to give an exact order, it just depends on circumstances, and Poskim have different, slightly different feelings and things. Beyond that, if one can say all of what we call the brachos of Kriya Shema, all of the latter part of davening, what we say in the morning after Baruch Hu, Baruch Hu Hashem Elokeinu Melech Yotzer Avorich Choshech, from the beginning of the brachos of Kriya Shema through Shemona Esrei, that requires a more significant block of time, but many people can make such time, that is appropriate too. And then, if we can add, ideally, the whole davening, the Psukei Dezimra, which we start with Baruch She'amar, or Nesach Sfarad, it recites some of it before Baruch She'amar, but that section of Tzila, is also appropriate. It's interesting that this actually is a matter of debate. Whether women should say Psukei Dezimra is a discussion in the poskim. And in fact, Sardic poskim, some of them anyway, say that a woman should not say the bracha of Baruch She'amar and the concluding bracha at the end of what we call the Psukei Dezimra, the section in which we say a lot of Tehillim, Yishtabach, the bracha known as Yishtabach. We begin Psukei Dezimra with a bracha and we conclude it with a bracha. Well, that's not a big guess, and I know where you're coming from, but we're more optimistic than that. Even if there isn't an expectation of being interrupted and being unable to finish, but it's an interesting thing. In the Gemara, it doesn't say that Pesukah Dezimra starts and ends with a bracha. There are proofs that in the time of Chazal, they did say these tefillos. There's even a tradition that Baruch Shamar fell from heaven. The Rabbanan discovered the text of it. Magen Avraham quotes it in Shulchan Aruch. We don't know who authored it. It's something that the Rabbanan found. It's a holy tefillah. But interestingly, we don't have in the Gemara that a bracha should be said at the beginning and end. But it does, the later Gaonim tell us we should, though, and it does seem to be a bracha on Pesukei Dezimra. I start off, we say a bracha, Hashem, we are now going to bless you with the words of David Avdecha, with the words of David HaMelech, and we conclude by saying, we've done so, and blessed are you, Hashem, Kael Melech Gadol Batishvokos, the one who is made great with praises, Kael HaVdos Adonathlos. We're making a bracha on the fact that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is praised with the formulations that we have just used. It is, to a degree, a bracha on Pesukei Dezimra. There's a classic and very old machlokas between basically the Ashkenazi and Sephardic poskim as to whether one can say a bracha on a mitzvah in which one is not obligated. A mitzvah saseh shazman grama. If a woman is not obligated in the mitzvah, but she does the mitzvah. If a woman's not obligated to take a lulav and esrog, but she does. So most of us, probably maybe all of us, well, most of us, recite the bracha. But the Sephardic poskim, the old machlokas Rishonim, will say they should not. So if, in fact, this bracha at the beginning and this bracha on the end are brachos on Pesukei Dezimra, and if Pesukei Dezimra is time-bound and a woman is not obligated, so some hold, she shouldn't say the brachos on it. So not to say Baruch Shamar Nishtabach or Avadi Yosef as a tshuva, the great Sephardic poskim, but she says women shouldn't say Baruch Shamar Nishtabach. The rest is Tehillim, it's Derayam, there's nothing wrong with saying Pesukim, but to say the brachos, he actually says they should not. The Ashkenazic poskim that we have, the Mishnah Berurah, says it's good to say it. The Aruch HaShulchan, very interestingly, quotes a biblical source. He says, why not say it like Miriam saying with the women at Kriyat Yamsuf? Pesukei Dezimra means Pesukim of praise. What's the problem? Nothing wrong with it. And if they are apparently of the opinion that and they seem to mean the brachas also, that the brachas are not really a bracha on a mitzvah. It's a bracha which is a type of praise. It's a lead-in, not a bracha on the mitzvah per se, and therefore there's no harm done if they said the bracha in any way. We'd paskin that they could make a bracha on a mitzvah that they're not chayiv. And anyway, so therefore, according to the Mishnah Berurah and Aruch HaShulchan, women can say Baruch Shamar. Interestingly, the Mishnah Berurah points to another source. There's a statement of Rabbi Akiva Eger in Shulchan Aruch. I don't think we paskin this way, but he says, if I forgot, let's say, something essential in my Shmona Esrei, I daven Shmona Esrei and I forgot to say Mashiv Aruch Amar Dagashem, I realized later, I have to daven over. Rabbi Akiva Eger says, go back to the beginning, not the beginning of Shmona Esrei. He says, go back to the beginning of Pesukei Dezimra. He says, it's one unit. Pesukei Dezimra, the beginning of that, is the lead-in to the Baruch of the Kirishma, which lead you into Shmona Esrei. He says, you got to do the whole thing over. Even if that isn't the way we paskin lahalacha, but it's indicative of the fact that he's holding that Pesukei Dezimra is integrally, it's related, it's connected to Shmona Esrei. And therefore, if we're saying that a woman should daven Shmona Esrei, it wouldn't be far off to say that the Pesukei Dezimra is part and parcel of that. And as I said, many of the poskim and the Ashkenazi follow seem to say, therefore, that a woman would say Pesukei Dezimra if she can. It's meritorious. And that the brachas would be included, Baruch Shamar and Yishtabach, and that is the practice of many women. Now, what if I have time to do most of davening, but not quite all of it? So here it gets easier, because that happens to men too. And in fact, there's a halacha. If I come to shul a little bit late, this is a theoretical example, if I come to shul a little bit late, and I want to make sure that I get up to Shmona Esrei with the tzibur. Tzila b'tzibur means me davening with the tzibur. I start Shmona Esrei roughly at the same time as the rest of the tzibur. If I'm way behind, and if I daven at my normal pace, by the time I get up to it, they're going to be finished, so I'm missing davening with the minyan. So the halacha gives us an order of what can be omitted in Pesukei Dezimra. The way it basically works is the earliest tefillos, the ones mentioned in the Gemara, are the most important. The ones that were added later in the time of the Gaonim, or that not all of the Rishonim agree always existed, those are the first to go. And that is, if you look in a sitter with halachas, an art scroll sitter we'll have in the back, the order of what can be omitted. The core psukah de Zimra is Baruch Sha'amar, Ashrei, and Yishtabach. There's a little more time we say Baruch Sha'amar, Ashrei, and the five paragraphs that follow it, the ones that start Halukah, and then Yishtabach. There's a little bit more time. You can look in the Svarim, they tell you how much to add in. I've never seen anyone successfully implement the halacha because it's so complicated to project how much time it'll take me. If I say this thing now and that thing, well, it's sometimes more theoretical than practical. But that same pecking order, which is stated in the halacha Svarim with regard to someone who's trying to catch up to Daven Shmoneh Esrei with the minyan, is the same order for someone who simply doesn't have time. You have X amount of time to daven in the morning. I can do the brachas of Kriya Shema, I can do Shmoneh Esrei, but there isn't quite time to do the whole Psukah de Zimra, so you can follow what you find in the back of a sitter, the pecking order of what should be said in Psukah de Zimra. Yeah. I appreciate the question, because my voice gets... I need a drink, so yeah, go ahead.
I one time was told by the wife of the rabbi that it would...
We'll have this out later.
To do the whole morning blessing, like if you had time for that, like that would be fine. I mean, just doing that, nothing else, you know.
What do you mean, the ones at the beginning of the sitter?
The one at the beginning, yes. The whole fold, the whole 9 yards.
Right, by the way, I should have mentioned that Birchas HaTorah also should be said if possible. Birchas HaTorah, the Birchas on the Torah, it's explicit in Shulchan Aruch, Nashim of Birchas, Birchas HaTorah. Even though the poskim don't seem to give it as high priority as some of the other things I mentioned, but if time allows, and it's not very long, it's a few quick paragraphs, it's appropriate to say the brachas of Torah as well. So you're talking about the brachas on the Torah?
Page 13 through page...
I got a different sitter for that.
Okay. But the beginning of the morning blessings are from all the way to the Akeda part, all the way.
Right. Okay,
Which is those, like, 5 or 7.
Yeah. You know, it depends what one is up to and able to do. That's certainly meritorious. It would be good to, if you're saying the whole bracha, so you're saying the paragraph at the end, which is also a bakasha, a request, the he ratzon lefanecha, may it be your will. A bracha is more of a praise, a blessing. But you're saying that also, so you incorporate that idea. You know, if there's more time and if one is up to it, to daven more of shachris or mincha is also good. Maariv was originally what's called a reshus. Not a non-obligatory tefillah at all, for men as well. Later it was accepted in the halacha community that we daven maariv, hence 3 minyanim a day, but many poskim can say that women, even if we'll follow the more stringent view that women should be davening, maariv they didn't accept upon themselves. That was never accepted, although there are some of women can or should daven maariv too. So maariv is the last in the order of priority. Shachris and mincha more important, but one can daven maariv as well. Yeah.
Another question.
Yeah.
When davening the bedtime Shema, okay, it assumes that if you did daven the evening davening, you only have to do the first paragraph. But if you're a woman, okay, and you didn't daven in the afternoon, are you required to do the whole paragraph? Or for men, it says if you didn't daven in the evening, you have to do the whole 3 paragraphs.
Right.
So what is it incumbent upon women?
It's not it wouldn't be incumbent. You can say the first one. It's nice to say all three. If one is not that tired yet, it's nice to say all three. Sometimes it helps.
Okay. So would be three.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's not really for the same reason, but the third paragraph of Shema mentions Yetzias Mitzrayim, mentions leaving Mitzrayim. And men actually have a mitzvah to recite Shema twice a day, all three paragraphs. A woman doesn't have that obligation. The very same Mishnah says a woman must daven says the Kriya Shema she's not obligated in. But it's still a good thing to say.
So it's good, but not...
Incumbent would be a much too strong a word.
The only siddur that has all three paragraphs is the one that has them all together. Otherwise,
right.
You flip around.
Right. That'll definitely put you to sleep. A lot of people have a hard time with the bedtime Shema, especially the bracha, because ideally, once I say the bracha, I'm supposed to fall asleep. And how do I know I'm going to fall asleep? My brother was in a certain learning camp where there was a great Rosh Yeshiva who was on campus, and one time some guys went out and were playing basketball late at night. Rosh Yeshiva came out in his bathrobe and went, Needless to say, that was the end of the game. Apparently he had said the bracha already. People sometimes have a hard time with it. Kriya Shema Alamita is really a different concept. It's not for the obligation of davening per se. It's before going to sleep. We say a tefillah that we should be safe and healthy and wake up and so on, but also appropriate, as you said. A couple of side points, or related points, not so side actually. If a woman is in shul and she's davening out of pace, or she came at a time where the tzibur is going to get up to Shemona Esrei, and at the rate that one is davening, she wouldn't reach Shemona Esrei with them. Should she skip in the same way that I mentioned, Halacha says a man should skip to get up to the Shemona Esrei with the tzibur, or should she daven at her regular pace? This is an interesting question. I found that Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach rules, he says she should not skip. She needn't, and actually says there's no reason to skip ahead. Daven at the pace, you don't have to skip around and rush ahead. The obligation of tefillah b'tzibur is really upon men. I have an obligation to daven with a minyan. A woman comes to shul, it's a good thing, and there's merit to that, but she need not pace her tefillah necessarily. It's good if it coincides, but you need not rush ahead. And in fact, there are some poskim, particularly those who base their psukim, their halachic rulings, more on the Kabbalah, on Kabbalistic teachings, who say that no one should ever skip. The tefillah is structured in such a way that it's like a ladder. It's meant to be in the order, and if I skip and jump ahead, I want to see somebody compare it, it's like you're serving a meal, and you needed to rush ahead. The ices were melting. Right, so you got to eat it now. So you know what we did? We made kiddush and had chal, and then we had the ices, and then you had the chopped liver. It's all the same food, but there's something wrong with this picture. So that's an analogy, not to be taken too literally, but the Kabbalistic form that Rizal says, a person who davens out of order is mahapech hatzinoros. He ruins the conduits of bracha that are brought down to us, are like pushed out of whack. It ruins the order. So some hold that no one should ever skip, even though tefillah b'tzibur is so important. Some hold even a man shouldn't skip. But certainly, Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach says that a woman need not skip to jump ahead. If at the rate she's davening, she wanted to daven a full davening, and she would have to jump ahead in order to daven with the tzibur, she need not do so. Yeah.
But a woman, what about davening during Kriya Satorah?
I thought you were going to say during the rabbi's speech. Davening during Kriya Satorah, if it can be avoided, it's better. But really, there isn't the obligation there. So if that's the time she has, you know, obviously not in a way that's disturbing to others or whatever, but I think it's okay. I'm shooting from the hip here. That's the danger of being recorded. But I think that's all right. I think it depends if it's going to be distracting for someone who's trying to listen, and during the rabbi's speech for sure. But, here it doesn't matter. I can't see you anyway through this machitza. If it's distracting to others, if it's easy to step out, probably better to do so. Probably, though, one should not walk out in the middle of an aliyah. When the Torah is being read, we're not supposed to walk out. You can walk out between aliyahs. It's not good to walk out. You're not really supposed to walk out in the middle of an aliyah, so to step out afterward would be appropriate. Yeah, Joan. Comes up more if one is davening later, and then there are various responses. Yeah. I mean, the basic rule of thumb, without making it very complicated, is that within Psukah de Zimra, you can respond to just about anything. In the brachas of Kriya Shema, it does get more complicated. I could give a whole shiur on that, and I'd probably be more of an anesthesiologist if I did. But yeah, it is a little bit complicated. Some the art school sitter and others have it in the back. The ones that have it as a chart, it's a little bit easier to look up. I think they have the chart on the Bima there, which doesn't do you a lot of good. Or anyone else for that matter. But Yeah, within the brachas of Kriya Shema, it gets more complicated. There's a difference between when you're at a natural stopping point, what's called Bein HaProkim, versus in the middle. It is a little bit complicated. There are different responses that have different status. You're right, I guess that is a complication that comes up when one is davening and the tibur is up to a different point. Yeah, that's true. Yeah, sure.
I have a question about time. If a woman is not obligated to daven at a certain time, so time is like 9:30 or something like that, you can't get started until after 9:30. Does that mean you can't say Shema at all?
No. You can say Shema later. Yeah. Zos not Kriya Shema is the end of the time when I can fulfill my mitzvah, as I say, HaTorah, to say Kriya Shema in the morning. That's the mitzvah that the Mishnah says is not incumbent upon women. Shema in Shachar serves two functions, as it does in Maariv. One is it's part of the tefillah, and the other is it's a fulfillment of the mitzvah from the Torah. That latter mitzvah is what the time is relevant to, but it's still part of the tefillah.
You're not doing anything completely out of line.
Not out of line. You're not out of line at all. You can say it later. As a matter of fact, in shul, 2 weeks ago, we didn't make it here, so people said it before, and then we said it as part of tefillah. So when you daven, you're saying it in the same way. Yeah. Yeah. No. If it's at the wrong time, you're not doing that mitzvah anyway. You're saying it as part of tefillah. Kikare batora is the expression that Chazal used. It's like reading those words of the Torah. Yeah. We still, even after the Zman Kriya Shema, we still do say the brachas of Kriya Shema. Yeah. Okay. Just another interesting side note. Tachnun is the section of Tefillah that immediately follows Shemona Esrei. Often called Nefilat Hapayim. Nefilat Hapayim means falling on your face. My son gets a kick out of it. Are we going to do this today, Tati? He likes when we say Tachnun. It's an intense tefillah after the Shemona Esrei. We don't say it on any day which is even semi-festive, on Rosh Chodesh, certainly on Shabbos and Yom Tov. We don't say it if there's any simcha, if there's a bris, if there's a chosan or a kal and shul. We don't say Tachnun, but it is an intense tefillah. We say Rachum, Bachanun, Chatosi Lefanecha, merciful one, I have sinned before you. It's an intense tefillah, so much so that we don't say it on happy occasion, we don't say it on overly sad occasion, we don't say it in a base ovel. It's almost as, it's really a Kabbalistic concept, it's almost as, it's bad enough, we don't need to start saying Rachum, Machanun, Chatosi, we don't need to say I've sinned, things are, so Tachan is a sensitive tefillah, an interesting tefillah, a very powerful tefillah according to the Gemara, and an interesting thing is that Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky writes in his Sefer on Shulchan Aruch that he has never seen or heard that women say Tachman.
Right.
So it's interesting. He adduced a proof to the contrary. There's a story in the Gemara in Sota that says Rabbi Yochanan overheard a young girl davening, and it says Nofla A'apa, she fell on her face, and she said, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, let me not cause anyone to see whatever she was davening for, but it says Nofla A'apa, she fell on her face. It sounds like she's doing the Tefillah Sapayim. Nofla A'apa is the Gemara's phrase for Tachnun. He says, but a counterproof is, you know, we have a halacha when men in the morning when we're wearing tefillin, so if I'm a righty, I wear my tefillin on my left arm. So when I do Tachlan, according to the Ramah, according to the way most people practice, I don't fall on my tefillin straps. When I lean on my arm, I lean on the other arm. So in the morning, I do Tachlan on my right arm, but in the afternoon when I'm not wearing tefillin, I do it on the left arm, because it's really supposed to be on the left arm. So if you look in Shulchan Aruch, when Moshe Ifilisi, and the Shulchan Aruch tells us this halacha, he says, in the morning, a righty would do it on his right hand, but in the afternoon, or if he's not wearing tefillin, he does it on the left. Says Rabbi Yaakov, what about for a woman? A woman's not wearing tefillin. That should be another exception to, you know, not doing it on the right. So perhaps you could infer from that omission that women did not say tachlin. Both of those, in either way, they're not very strong proofs, but he says that it doesn't seem to have been done. No, yes, sir, it doesn't say anything wrong with it, but he said he never saw it as being the minhag. Interestingly, I saw Moshe Feinstein writes in the Tshuva that children never said Tachman either. He said the way he remembers it in Russia, children didn't say Tachman. He said today kids do say Tachman, and they're trained to say it in school probably because they didn't learn to do it. They wouldn't know how to do it when they get older, but he says for some reason that wasn't the minute. So there's a little bit of mystery surrounding Tachlin. Somebody told me a couple of days ago that the Women's Siddur recently published doesn't have it in there. That's based on this assumption that it's not the minhag. I don't think there's anything wrong with saying it, but it doesn't seem to be the common minhag. A little bit mysterious. I don't have greater insight than that. Yeah. That's good you brought that up. There's a very interesting... There's a lot of mystery surrounding Tachlin, and one of the mysterious things is the Gemara never says any stipulation. The Gemara says, Tachlin, you fall on your face. Later, the Rishonim, one of the early Rishonim, says, you don't do the Mefilas Apayim, putting the head down, unless the Sefer Torah is present. Because there's a Pasuk in Navi that says he fell on his face before the Aron Elohim. Yeshua fell on his face in front of the Aron. The author of the Shulchan Aruch cites this, and he says, I don't understand. There's many other places where you find in Tanakh where people did fall on their face, and it doesn't say there was a Sefer Torah or an Aron present. But nevertheless, he says, Im Kabbalah hu Nekabel. Apparently there was some tradition that that's the way it's supposed to be. So if we're not in the presence of a Sefer Torah, we don't put the head down. That applies to men as well. If we make a minion somewhere, and there's no Sefer Torah, we don't put the head down. Interestingly, in Yerushalayim, they do. Only Yerushalayim is considered like a Sefer Torah is there. In Yerushalayim, they do say Tachnan with the head down. But otherwise, we don't. There's a question in the postgame as to whether Svarim are like a Sefer Torah. If I'm in a room where there are Svarim, is that equivalent? Many postgame hold that that suffice. If the Svarim are used, if they're not used, if it's not a place, not a place where people learn, then maybe not so. A friend of mine told me he was once in a Svarim store in Muncie, and he heard somebody walk in and said, I need 4 feet of blue, 3 feet of maroon, 2 feet of green. So if that's the nature of the Svarim, then that probably would not warrant talking. But if it's a base medrash, then some folks can hold, even if the Torah isn't there per se. Interestingly, by the way, some know that if the Aron is there, even if the Torah isn't there, that also suffices. There isn't an Aron. Usually, if you're talking about a home setting, there isn't a Sefer Torah there, so then you wouldn't put the head down anyway. All right, these are some of the halachos relating to tefillah and women in tefillah. To come back to where I started, the truth is tonight we were originally scheduled to have a Navi Shir. And if we were learning Sefer Shmuel, what would we see at the beginning? Tefillah of Chana. The Tefillah of Chana had great, great power. And in fact, much of the halachos of Tefillah and the Gemara in Brachos and Rosh Hashanah are based on Chana's Tefillah. So we started off with a machlokas aposkin. Is it a very minimal obligation of Tefillah, or is it broader? But one thing is clear, that Tefillah works, and it's non-discriminatory. And if anything, much of what we know of tefillah comes from the tefillahs of a great woman. So it really is not so much about what we're obligated to do. It's what we can do. And I said before, Soloveitchik posed the question, if the Ramban holds that there's no mitzvah in HaTorah to daven, how do we understand that? He asked this question to the kids in this conference on prayer, on tefillah. He said, how could the Ramban say that you have a Yiddish, the Torah doesn't have a mitzvah to daven, how could it be? And you know what his answer was? It shouldn't need a mitzvah. It's a basic need of a person. It should be a basic need of a person to daven. A person has needs and cry out to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Same way there's no mitzvah to eat or to breathe. It's a basic human need, so to daven. The Gemara in Baba Kama, we have a famous concept. There are different categories of damagers. One of them is a man, a human being who causes damage of certain... That is, the word used in the Mishnah is mav'eh, mem beis ayin hay, and the Gemara says that's a strange word. What does mav'eh mean? And the Gemara says mav'eh means man, and it quotes a pasuk with the same root, beis ayin, the pasuk in Daniel, and says oyun boyu, man beseeches. Very interesting that the word that the Mishnah uses to sum up the essence of man is a word that means beseech, daven. The essence of man, this is not my own idea, many of the Achronim point this out, the essence of human being is that he needs to daven, he or she needs to daven. So we certainly have what to rely on when one does not have much time to daven. We should certainly try to say a form of a bakasha, and we've satisfied what we have, a firm grounding on Minhag Yisrael that existed and the Magen Avraham and Shulchan Aruch, but certainly if one has more time, Klal Yisrael needs tefillos, and the more that we can daven, it brings about great bracha to Klal Yisrael. And as I said, Yosef's master saw that Hashem was with him. What does that mean, the Midrash says? He saw that he davened. The person davened, that Kadosh Baruch Hu is with him, and the Kadosh Baruch Hu listens to the tefillos of all of Klal Yisrael, and who knows, we just might need a few more to bring great Yeshuas and Nechamas, and Rit Hashem, Kadosh Baruch Hu should hear our tefillos from all of Klal Yisrael together. Again, next week, same time, and Rit Hashem will be talking on the subject of the icing on the cake, laws of cutting letters on Shabbos. A good night. Thank you. It's a very common word. I'm trying to turn this off, don't mind me. It's a very common word in Gemara. Anytime we say we need or we want, Beis Ayin Aleph, Ba'ah. And it means to ask. Whenever it says that they ask the question, it says Ba'u, they ask. So that's Maveh, man needs. He needs to ask.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
The world is fairly happy. I agree with you.